Good afternoon. It's Mountain Edition. I'm Allison Bechtesh.
And I'm Wyatt Orm. Area schools today closed after an online threat was discovered.
The town of Basalt could become the first local sanctuary city.
Public land in Carbondale is going into private holdings.
And in Snowmass Village, a new group will guide the future of public land.
Those stories and more coming up on Mountain Edition. The Roaring Fork School District has lifted the lockout placed on area schools early this morning. The FBI and Carbondale Police Department reported an ostensible threat to the district, which was posted in an online chat forum. Authorities say the IP address came from the Carbondale area. As a precaution, the Roaring Fork and Aspen school districts canceled classes for local high schools and restricted anyone from exiting or entering the middle and elementary schools. However, parents were allowed to pick up their kids. Carbondale's police chief, Gene Schilling, told Aspen Public Radio this afternoon the FBI now believes the threat was spam. The FBI stated, quote, "There's no credible threat at this time," end quote.
Snowmass Village Town Council has created a new advisory board with a focus on parks, open space, trails, and recreation. Elizabeth Stewart-Severy reports.
Snowmass Village has about 1,400 acres of open space and 30 trails. And now there will be a board of 7 to 15 citizens to advise town council on related decisions and issues. Those members will be appointed by elected officials. Andy Warline is the director of the Parks Department for the village. He says balance is key in forming this commission.
We need hikers, we need mountain bikers, we need equestrians.
And more. The department encompasses recreational programs like yoga and team sports as well. Warline says the board will set its own priorities based on a department-wide management plan that the town adopted last fall. At the top of the list now, he says, is trail etiquette among all users. Applications will be available next week with a goal of convening the new board in the first quarter of the year. Elizabeth Stewart-Severy, Aspen Public Radio News.
A controversial land exchange is scheduled to become finalized today.
The deal allows for private land held by Leslie and Abigail Wexner to become public, while current Bureau of Land Management holdings will be incorporated into their estate. The exchange involves land in Pitkin, Eagle, and Garfield counties, as well as financial payments from the billionaires. The government would be giving up 1,500 acres in exchange for the Wexner's 550-acre Sudi Ranch north of Carbondale and 112-acre parcel along Prince Creek. But in a press release sent out yesterday, the BLM says the skewed acreage is offset by the actual value of the land. However, local conservationists say the finalization of the trade is premature because there's still an appeal against the exchange in front of a federal review board.
Three artists, all with connections to the Roaring Fork Valley, will launch Basalt's Art Base into space with a unique group exhibit. Aspen Public Radio's Claire Woodcock has the details.
Illustrator Brian Colley, sculptor John Kohorst, and printmaker Andrew Rice are all virtuosos fascinated by the universe as seen through the lens of the astronaut. Their works will be showcased in a new joint exhibit titled Ideas on the Infinite. Rice grew up in the Valley and teaches printmaking in the art department at the University of Utah. He describes his characterization of the astronaut as psychological and existential.
He's got this suit. And the suit is what helps keep him alive, but it's also what prevents him from accessing his environment.
The opening reception runs from 5 to 7 p.m. on Friday. Another reception will be held on Saturday morning from 10 to noon. Claire Woodcock, Edlis Neeson, Arts and Culture Desk.
Basalt could become the first sanctuary city in the Roaring Fork Valley.
In a recent executive order, President Donald Trump took aim at sanctuary cities. These are places that supposedly don't comply with federal immigration authorities. But there's no set definition of a sanctuary city. And that's part of the reason why some legal experts are skeptical of President Trump's executive order to cut funding to these places. Basalt Mayor Jackie Whitsitt says she plans to bring a resolution to the council at the end of this month to possibly become a sanctuary city. The town's lawyer is currently looking into what that would mean. That said, police departments throughout the valley have stated publicly it's not their aim to enforce federal immigration law. Wyatt Orm, Aspen Public Radio News.
Lawmakers in both parties are trying to make it more difficult for homeowners to sue condo developers over construction defects. They hope it will lead to more condo development and housing and lower rents. Correspondent Benta Berglund talked to State House reporters about the issue as part of our Capital Conversation series.
I'm joined by Peter Marcus, a reporter for ColoradoPolitics.com, and Ed Seelover with the Denver Business Journal. Ed, give us a quick overview about why construction defects is a big deal here at the State House. And for listeners across the state who may not be as familiar with it, what's at stake and describe what's happening?
Throughout the Denver metro area and Colorado, only 3% of new housing stock currently is being built in condominiums. Now, in most cities, that's actually 20%. And the reason you want to have a good supply of condos coming onto the market is because they're popular for both young professionals who are buying into their first home without wanting to pay for a standalone house. And they're also popular among baby boomers who are downsizing once they become empty nesters, but still want to actually stay in a city. Now, builders say the reason there is so few condos coming onto the market is that trial lawyers have exploited class action lawsuit law and file lawsuits on pretty much anything that comes onto the market because it is so easy to do so. And for 5 years now, Republicans and some Democrats have looked for a solution that would involve reducing lawsuits. These typically have involved efforts to make it harder to file a lawsuit by requiring a greater percentage of people within a condominium association to vote to go forward with the lawsuit, and efforts to try to force these disputes into alternative dispute resolutions such as mandatory arbitration, feeling that this will take away the costs and time of going to court.
It's a priority for Republicans and Democrats in both chambers. The question is whether they can actually get it done. We're already starting to see some of the same fights pop up again that could derail the entire process. The reason everybody wants it, as Ed was pointing to, yes, this is a problem in the Denver metro area, but it is a statewide issue. You go out to Durango, there is a huge lack of housing there, condos, townhouses, things like that. And in these mountain communities, it's already ridiculously expensive to live out there. Salaries don't often keep pace with the Denver metro area, yet housing costs are skyrocketing.
Thanks. That was Peter Marcus with ColoradoPolitics.com. Ed Seelover with the Denver Business Journal. I'm Benta Berkland in Denver, and you've been listening to Capital Conversation.
This is Mountain Edition on Aspen Public Radio. I'm Wyatt Orm. Stay in the know with what's happening in the Roaring Fork Valley and beyond through our social media channels. Follow Aspen Pub Radio on Twitter, follow us on Instagram, and like us on Facebook for up-to-the-minute news updates, compelling images, and intriguing stories. Aspen Public Radio, your news, your music, your station. Aspen Skiing Company wants to make some changes to the Sam's Knob area on snowmass. Elizabeth Stewart Severy reports that the U.S. Forest Service is now taking public comment on the plans.
SkiCo wants to build a new ski patrol facility and expand Sam's Smokehouse restaurant. They say this will improve safety on the mountain and ease long lines at the restaurant during holiday rushes. There are also plans to install two underground fiber optic cables to help with on-mountain communications. The ski patrol building would replace a temporary structure near the top of the Village Express chairlift. The proposal is for a 2,000-square-foot building, including offices, conference space, and a workroom. The restaurant addition would be between 3,000 and 5,000 square feet on the northwest corner of the current building. The Forest Service says no trees will be cut for the projects. Elizabeth Stewart Severy, Aspen Public Radio Environment Desk.
Theater Aspen has announced its call for regional actors to audition for its summer performances. Claire Woodcock has the details.
The program is set to open the summer with its biggest production yet, the Tony Award-winning musical Hairspray.
There are a lot of talented people in Aspen and the Valley, and we love for them to audition. It's really swell when we can hire people that are from town.
That's Paige Price, Theater Aspen's executive artistic director. She says that talent is not the only thing she'll be considering when she's casting this upcoming season.
We want fun team players who are kind of excited about a mountain theater experience.
Hairspray will run in Reporatory this summer with productions of the play Sex with Strangers and new musical The World According to Snoopy. Auditions for Valley actors will take place Sunday, February 12th at the Red Brick Arts Center. For more information, visit theateraspen.com. Claire Woodcock, Edless Neeson Arts and Culture Desk.
Aspen Gay Ski Week has come and gone, but its impact on the community is felt year-round. Up front, the event is flashy and loud. But behind the scenes, there's a local nonprofit organization that funds youth groups and mental health organizations which support LGBT rights.
Natalie Cummings sees it every year.
The community is amazing during Gay Ski Week. The community really comes out. But then, you know, those rainbow flags go down, the X Games flags go up, and it's...
And it's out of sight, out of mind, the other 51 weeks of the year. Cummings is on the board of directors for Aspen Out, the nonprofit behind Aspen's Gay Ski Week. The organization donates the proceeds to help LGBT youth in the Valley and beyond. This year, a new development has happened since those rainbow flags went down. Donald Trump is now the president. While he has characteristically kept his cards close to his chest about his views on gay rights, Cummings sees that even his rhetoric is normalizing hate speech.
The hatred's always been there, but now it's more accepted, which I think is terrifying. And then, you know, you bring along social media and it's out there and it's people feel more entitled to speak up and be hateful and bully. And it's almost like, let's ignore the haters, but that's impossible. And we need to face them straight on and, you know, make sure that they know that we're here and we're here to stay.
Bullying is a main focus of Aspen Out's work. Cummings says with the Roaring Fork Valley's chart-topping suicide rate, those who already feel different or ostracized are even more vulnerable. To that end, volunteers help curate Gay Ski Week participants' words of encouragement for lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender youth, like in this video produced last year.
And that I'm okay and perfect the way I am.
There's reasons to live. You never know what's around the corner, ever.
And I was hiding who I was in high school. And I would have liked somebody to tell me, 5 years from now, you're going to be comfortable with who you are. You're going to have a great lover. You're going to have a good life. And you're going to find happiness.
Kevin McManaman is the executive director of Aspen Out. Yes, Aspen Gay Ski Week is a lighthearted, nonstop party. But the $100,000 it raises for gay straight alliance groups in Valley high schools is serious. Because topics that were thought of as victories for the LGBT community during the Obama years are now back up for discussion.
There are people out there that want to take our rights away. There are people out there that want to repeal gay marriage. And it's going to come to the forefront very soon.
Aspen Out supports the Gay Straight Alliances, or GSAs, at Aspen, Basalt, Carbondale, and Glenwood Springs High Schools. Even area middle schools are putting together the clubs, which provide a safe place for students to support each other and talk about sexual orientation, gender identity, homophobia, and transphobia. Bo Takarabi is the advisor of the GSA in Basalt. Even when the nation's leaders don't call for tolerance, she says this next generation demands it.
It's not like I started a club because I thought our school needed one. Kids came and said, why don't we have a gay straight alliance, or can we start a gay straight alliance? I mean, it was definitely a kid-driven idea.
One of the members of the Basalt GSA is Mauricio Sosa. Aspen Out has helped with funds for Sosa's Peace Garden, an escape he created from judgment and bullying.
I started realizing that more people have gone through what I have gone through, or like have been bullied, or that they feel like they don't fit in at school. Maybe by creating a space like the Peace Garden that many other people would feel more secure being at school.
And it's those kind of small community projects that are most important now. Throughout the country, people of different nationalities, religions, and sexual orientation are feeling discriminated against. But here in the Valley, there is an opportunity to show that we are all created equal. Again, Natalie Cummings.
Tolerance can always be shown more if, you know, you see someone hurting, you help them, you know, instead of, you know, looking back and just saying, you know, well, I donated to the ACLU. It's like, yeah, but we also need to continue the community and local effort.
On the federal level, President Trump nominated Neil Gorsuch to the Supreme Court last week. The Colorado judge has a track record of rulings against transgender citizens and in favor of religious freedom bills that allow corporations to discriminate against LGBT consumers. Locally, though, the GSAs are starting their planning for a valley-wide spring dance that promotes acceptance of all students and sexual orientations.
Colorado officials have highlighted 7 shovel-ready road and water projects should the Trump administration secure infrastructure funding. The National Governors Association sent that list along with projects from 48 other states and territories to the Trump administration yesterday. Correspondent Benta Berkland has more.
President Donald Trump wants to revamp the nation's roads and bridges to the tune of roughly $1 trillion. Amy Ford is a spokeswoman for the Colorado Department of Transportation. She says the state is facing a $9 billion shortfall over the next decade. The most urgent projects focus on I-25 and I-70, and she's hopeful something can get done in Washington.
The question is how to pay for a system that has been very underfunded nationwide for a while now. And that's why you see projects like this on these lists. Since this is a priority of the new president's administration to really identify those areas and the impacts that projects like that could have on the country, on our infrastructure, on economic development.
Colorado's list includes adding an express lane heading west on I-70 into the mountains and adding capacity lanes along the northern and southern parts of I-25. It also includes water projects and one to expand rural broadband. I'm Benta Berkland at the State Capitol.
The number of students who dropped out of Basalt High School in 2016 was over three times what it was in 2015. Wyatt sat down with assistant principal Jamie Hozak, who says 2016 was a high year, but it's indicative of a larger struggle at the school.
The numbers on the Colorado Department of Education's website, 2015 there were 8 dropouts, in 2016 there were 31. Why?
We have a number of students who struggle in school and do not always have the support structures outside of school to help build resilience and deal with that, and we're working on taking on that role so that we don't see them, we don't lose them.
And do you think that's just a matter of like sensitizing the faculty to those kinds of issues?
Somewhat, but some of the students, you know, who maybe it's like where there's a high incidence of poverty, high experience with poverty or some stressor trauma associated with immigration, or I don't know, that those aren't the only stress factors, will sometimes feel a bit too far away from something that's engaging meaningful to them. And also at the same time, you know, have less access to some of the support structures that kind of catch you and build you up when you do fail or fall.
Have you guys identified ways to engage these students, to find these students?
I don't want to pretend that the answer is yeah, and absolutely. Here's the plan and here's why we're going to be successful next month. But what we're trying to build is a school-wide, I would eventually like culture of, but definitely some systems for keeping an eye on students, checking in with them. You know, in spite of whatever family supports outside the school, we try to guarantee a person or two or three, but at least a person who's checking in with a student on a daily, almost, or a regular basis. Yeah. And that's stuff, we're working on it, and it's we're getting better at it. But we recognize that like not all students feel that there's someone who's looking out for them.
What's the hardest part of your job?
You know, 2% becoming 6%, you know, maybe there's some things in the statistics that we could split hairs about, and maybe it'll be 4% last year, but I'm not showing it to you, but I have a list of names in front of me, and I know that people have worked with these students to try to get them back on track and towards a path where they're going to be more successful. And, you know, right now they're really at risk in their lives, and that's hard to see.
Jamie Hozak is the assistant principal at Basalt High School, and I'm Wyatt Orm from Aspen Public Radio News.
You're listening to Mountain Edition from Aspen Public Radio News. I'm Allison Bechtesh. If you missed the first part of today's show, you can find a podcast on our website, aspenpublicradio.org. While you're browsing our site, make sure to sign up for ForkFed, our weekly digital newsletter. ForkFed arrives in your inbox every Friday afternoon, catching you up on the week's news in a fun and informative way. A professional cuddling business closed its doors in Rifle last month after dealing with harassment from clients and the community, Claire Woodcock reports.
Amy Wilshire knew that opening a professional cuddling business in a rural location wasn't going to be an easy sell.
Anticipated people would find the idea weird and unusual.
What Wilshire didn't anticipate was people wanting more from her than just cuddling. Clients insisted on her beginning to make house calls.
I got quite a few calls of guys who were just kind of abusive about it.
She knew part of her job was going to be convincing people that the health benefits associated with physical platonic touching are real and can be used as a form of treatment for people living with mood disorders.
Human touch reduces the hormones in our body that make us feel stressed or depressed.
Wilshire also knew she'd have to justify the concept to a smaller market. Most cuddling businesses pop up in cities like Boulder, but she saw a need for this type of physical therapy in Rifle. And for the first few months, people were trying it.
I had quite a few people come in and they could see the benefit of it.
When her store, called Touched, first launched in August, Wilshire told the Glenwood Post-Independent that going off-site for clients wouldn't be an option. She had cameras installed in the office she leased through October. She says the cameras were there for her client's safety as well as her own.
But after a couple months of getting calls, can you come to my house? I don't want to be seen going there. I just thought I might be able to serve the community better if they could be more anonymous.
In November, she closed her brick-and-mortar location and began making house calls, exactly what she told the Post-Independent she wouldn't do. That's when things got weird.
The clients got creepy. Without the safety net of the cameras, it just didn't feel safe anymore.
Wilshire's last house call took place in mid-December. She officially closed shop at the end of January.
If I had to do anything differently, I would have done it in a different place. Our community is not open to it. At least Rifle isn't open to a new way of therapy.
Even after everything she's been through, Wilshire says she still loves a good hug. Claire Woodcock, Edlis Neeson Arts and Culture Desk.
As more and more people make use of public lands for skiing, hiking, and biking, wildlife experience additional strain. This week, two Colorado researchers are in the Roaring Fork Valley to discuss how best to balance recreation and wildlife conservation. Elizabeth Stewart-Severy has the details.
Sarah Reed and Sarah Thomas are passionate about having fun outside in nature and about protecting wildlife. In fact, they started discussing how best to balance these sometimes competing interests while trail running. Reed explains.
We're really coming to this from the perspective of people who understand and value the natural resources and wildlife of our state, and who also enjoy getting out into the backcountry and recreating.
Reed is a scientist with the Wildlife Conservation Society. She studies how humans impact animal species. She, an environmental policy expert, Sarah Thomas, will be presenting this week as part of the Naturalist Nights lecture series, hosted by three local nonprofits. Thomas explains that American conservation efforts historically have been tied to recreation. Many communities combine recreation and conservation into one agency, like Pitkin County's Open Space and Trails Department. The idea is that we save land so that we can walk in open spaces. But that's not always the best approach for wildlife, Reed says.
We just need to acknowledge that combining these two goals is not always compatible in all places and for all species.
There is a long-held belief that low-impact human activity, like hiking and biking, doesn't disrupt wildlife. But more recent research indicates that this is not the case. Here's Thomas.
There are implications of these activities for wildlife, and so it's something we need to better understand.
Especially as the number of people using public land skyrockets. Reed cites a 2015 study that found that protected areas worldwide see 8 billion visits every year. Locally, use of the most popular trails in the Maroon Bells Wilderness is up about 300% from 10 years ago. Thomas says communities across the American West are striving to provide both safe havens for wildlife and places where people can play and enjoy the outdoors. But finding that balance can still be difficult.
There's certainly a need just to have a conversation about these issues and to be open.
In the Roaring Fork Valley, that conversation will continue this week. Reed and Thomas present Wednesday evening at the 3rd Street Center in Carbondale and Thursday at Hallam Lake in Aspen. Elizabeth Stewart-Severy, Aspen Public Radio Environment Desk.
The Cornerstone Classical School in Basalt is one of two of its kind in the whole state. It's a non-denominational Christian school which prides itself on academic rigor. The one graduating senior this year has to write and defend a 5,000-word thesis. Wyatt spent a recent morning at the school and brings us this report.
Jude is in the first grade, and he's sitting at his desk. At the top of his worksheet, he's written his name, Jube. The lowercase d is a b. He and the other first grader, Clara, are working with a teacher on this sentence. The busy bee worked quickly. The question is, what kind of word is quickly?
Adverb.
The adverb, correct.
The pencils they're using are too big for their little hands. They keep dropping them on the desk, which makes a drum-rolling sound. And yet they know what an adverb is? What about just a verb? What's a verb?
Sorry.
I don't really know.
Doesn't a verb show action?
Mm-hmm.
This hint makes something click.
Yeah. The verb shows action.
There's no doubt.
It tells what the subject does, like seeing.
They don't necessarily, especially at the younger grades, they don't necessarily understand everything, but it stays with them, the power of the word and the rhythm.
Steve Marshall is the headmaster of the Cornerstone Classical School. He's also one of 18 teachers for the school's 40 students. The rhymes, rhythm, and repetition are an essential part of the pedagogy, he says. Here's Mrs. DeBose's fifth grade class singing about prepositions to a familiar tune.
Aboard, about, above, across, after, against, along, among, around, at
49. The goal is to give students the verbal skills they need to articulate themselves precisely.
Chlorine gas, like, takes a shorter time to kill people, but you have to have pristine weather conditions.
These seventh graders are talking about the First World War. Steve Marshall, that is Mr. Marshall, reads them poems, which they discuss.
Gas, gas! Quick, boys, an ecstasy of fumbling, fitting the clumsy helmets just in time.
This class is called Omnibus. It's history, literature, and theology all rolled into one.
Okay. What's the difference between murdering and fighting in war? What's the difference?
When you're murdering, you're killing an innocent person that never did anything wrong. But in war, you're fighting for something. Like, what were they fighting for in the war?
That's a great question. What were they fighting for?
Marshall says he doesn't want typical Sunday school answers to his questions. He wants his students to dive in headfirst and wrestle with the material. He's serious about education. On the walls of his office, five swords are hung.
Well, let's talk about discipline, shall we?
He actually gives these to his eighth graders when they graduate to congratulate them for how hard they've worked. In the morning, when the students get to school around 8 a.m., they first go to morning prayer. Not all the students are Christians, but that doesn't matter. They're singing. One student performs a short sermon. Before all this, though, they say two separate pledges of allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States. I pledge allegiance to the Christian flag and to the Savior for whose kingdom
is. Mr. Marshall doesn't want to indoctrinate his students. He wants them to think critically. But he wants them to do so, quote, in joyful submission to God, end quote. So if a student of his excelled in school and then decided for themselves they didn't want to be Christian anymore, has the school succeeded or has it failed?
We have succeeded because the premise of this school is we want the students to think for themselves, okay? Our job is not to make students Christians. That's the parents, that's the families, that's the church. We are not a church, we're a school.
But he adds, knowledge is a powerful tool. And without the guidance of Scripture, in his opinion,
it can be dangerous.
Along with the swords in Marshall's office, there's a shield and a knight's helmet. The senior graduating in May will have his pick of the two. He'll leave the school, Marshall hopes, equipped with powerful tools and ones that he knows how to use.
That's all for this week's Mountain Edition. I'm Allison Bektesh.
And I'm Wyatt Orm. To hear this show again or subscribe to our Mountain Edition podcast, head to our website, aspenpublicradio.org.
Tune in tomorrow at 3:30 for Valley Roundup. A panel of local journalists join news director Carolyn Zachariasen for commentary and analysis on the week's news.
Thanks for listening. Mountain Edition is a production of Aspen Public Radio News.